Break back a yard and left, Dave. O'Donnell was like a blind man. His eyes were tight on the two guys and wouldn't leave them. He heard Reacher's voice and tracked backward and left, fast. Reacher pulled the tarot reader's door and held it open and let O'Donnell loop in around him. The two guys were following, now 20 yards away. Reacher crowded inside after O'Donnell. The tarot parlor was empty, apart from a woman of about 19 sitting alone at a table. The table was a dining room item about 7 feet long, draped to the floor with red cloth, packs of cards all over it. The woman had long dark hair and was wearing a purple cheesecloth dress that was probably leaking vegetable dye all over her skin. "Got a back room?" Reacher asked her.
"Just a toilet."
"Go in there and lie down on the floor, right now.
What's up?
You tell me." The woman didn't move until O'Donnell's hands came out of his pockets. The knuckles were on his right fist like a shark's smile. The switchblade was in his left hand. It was closed. Then it popped open with a sound like a bone breaking. The woman jumped up and fled. And Angelina, who worked on Vine, she knew the rules of the game. O'Donnell said,
"Who are these guys?"
"They just bought me these shirts."
"Is this going to be a problem?"
"Possibly." "Plan? You like the hardballer?"
"Better than nothing."
"Okay, then." Reacher flipped up the edge of the tablecloth and crouched down and backed under the table on his knees. O'Donnell followed him to his left and dragged the cloth back into position. He touched it with his knife, a short, gentle, sideways stroke, and a slit appeared in front of him. He widened it to the shape of an eye with his fingers. Then he did the same in front of Reacher. Reacher braced the flat of his hands against the underside of the table. O'Donnell swapped the knife into his right hand and braced his left the same way as Reacher's. Then they waited. The guys were at the door within about 8 seconds. They paused and peered in through the glass, and then they pulled the door and came inside. Paused again, 6 feet in front of the table, guns pointed straight out with the butts twisted parallel to the floor. They took a cautious step forward, paused again. O'Donnell's right hand was wrapped with the knuckles and was gripping the knife, but it was the only free hand under the table. He used it to count down. Thumb, index finger, middle finger. 1, 2, 3. On three, Reacher and O'Donnell heaved the table up and out. They powered it through an explosive quarter circle, 3 feet in the air, 3 feet forward. The flat of the top tipped vertical and collected the guns first, and then moved on and smacked the two guys full in the chests and faces. It was a heavy table, solid wood, maybe oak. It put the guys straight down with no trouble at all. They went over on their backs in a cloud of tarot cards and lay still under the slab in a tangle of red cloth. Reacher got up and stepped onto the upside-down table and rode it like a surfboard. Then he jumped up and down a couple of times. O'Donnell timed it for when Reacher's weight was off it and kicked the table backwards 6 inches until the two guys were exposed to the waist and their gun hands were accessible. He took the hardballers and used his switchblade to slice the webs of the two guys' thumbs. Painful. And a real disincentive against holding pistols again until they healed, which could be a long time. Depending on their approach to nutrition and antisepsis. Reacher smiled briefly. The technique had been a part of his unit's SOP. Then he stopped smiling, because he recalled that Jorge Sanchez had developed it, and Jorge Sanchez was dead in the desert somewhere.
"Not too much of a problem," O'Donnell said.
"We've still got the good stuff," Reacher said. O'Donnell put his ceramic collection back in his pockets and tucked the hardballer into his waistband under his suit coat, handed the second gun to Reacher, who shoved it in his pants pocket and draped his T-shirts over it. Then they stepped out to the sunshine and headed north on Vine again and turned west on Hollywood Boulevard. Carla Dixon was waiting for them in the Chateau Marmont's lobby.
"Curtis Mawney called," she said. "He liked that thing you did with Franz's mail."
so he got the Vegas PD to check through the stuff in Sanchez and Orozco's office. And they found something.
Chapter 40. Mawny showed up in person 30 minutes later. He stepped through the lobby door, still tired, still carrying his battered leather briefcase. He sat down and asked, "Who is Adrian Mount?"
Reacher looked up. Azhari Mahmoud, Adrian Mount, Alan Mason, Andrew McBride, Anthony Matthews. The Syrian and his four aliases. Information Mawny didn't know they had.
"No idea," he said.
"You sure?"
"Pretty much."
Mawny balanced his briefcase on his knees and opened the lid and took out a sheet of paper, handed it over. It was blurred and indistinct. It looked like a fax of a copy of a copy of a fax. At the top it said, "Department of Homeland Security," but not in the style of an official letterhead. It looked more like content hacked out of a computer file. Plain DOS script. It related to an airline booking that a guy called Adrian Mount had made on British Airways, London to New York. The booking had been finalized 2 weeks ago for a flight 3 days ago. First class, one way, Heathrow to JFK, seat 2K, last departure of the evening. Expensive. Paid for with a legitimate credit card. Booked through British Airways UK website, although it was impossible to say exactly where in the world the mouse had been physically clicked.
"This came in the mail?" Reacher asked.
Mawny said, "It was stored in their fax machine's memory. It came in 2 weeks ago. The machine was out of paper, but we know that Sanchez and Orozco weren't around 2 weeks ago. Therefore, this must be a response to a request they made at least a week earlier. We think they put a bunch of names on an unofficial watch list."
"A bunch of names?"
"We found what we think is the original request. They had notes circulating in the mail, just like Franz. Four names."
Mawny pulled a second sheet of paper from his case. It was a photocopy of a sheet of blank paper with Manuel Orozco's spidery handwriting all over it. Adrian Mount, Alan Mason, Andrew McBride, Anthony Matthews. Check with DHS for arrival. Fast, untidy scrawl, written in a hurry. Not that Orozco's penmanship had ever been neat. Four names, not five. Azhari Mahmoud's real name wasn't there. Reacher figured that Orozco knew that whoever the hell Mahmoud was, he would be traveling under an alias. No point in having aliases if you didn't use them.
"DHS, Mawny said. "The Department of Homeland Security. You know how hard it is for a civilian to get cooperation out of Homeland Security? Your pal Orozco must have called in a shitload of favors, or spent a shitload of bribe money. I need to know why."
"Casino business, maybe?"
"Possible. Although Vegas security doesn't necessarily worry if bad guys show up in New York. New York arrivals are more likely headed for Atlantic City. Someone else's problem."
"Maybe they share. Maybe there's a network. Guys can hit Jersey first and Vegas second."
"Possible," Mawny said again.
"Did this Adrian Mount guy actually arrive in New York?"
Mawny nodded. "The INS computer has him entering through Terminal 4. Terminal 7 had already closed for the night. The flight was delayed."
"And then what?"
"He checks in at a Madison Avenue hotel."
"And then?"
"He disappears. No further trace."
"Bods."
"We move on down the list. Alan Mason flies to Denver, Colorado, takes a room at a downtown hotel, and then, we don't know yet, we're still checking."
"But you think they're all the same guy?"
"Obviously, they're all the same guy. The initials are a dead giveaway."
Reacher said, "That makes me Chief Justice of the Supreme Court."
"You sure act like it."
"So who is he?"
"I have no idea. The INS inspector won't remember him. Those Terminal 4 guys see 10,000 faces a day. The New York hotel people won't remember him. We haven't spoken to Denver yet, but they probably won't remember him either. Wasn't he photographed at immigration? We're working on getting the picture.
Reacher went back to the first fax, the Homeland Security data, the advanced passenger information.
He's British, he said.
Mawney said, not necessarily. He had at least one British passport, that's all.
So what's your play?
We start a watch list of our own. Sooner or later, Andrew McBride or Anthony Matthews will show up somewhere. Then at least we'll know where he's going.
What do you want from us?
You ever heard of any of those names?
No.
No friends anywhere with the initials A and M?
Not that I recall.
Enemies?
Don't think so.
Did Orozco know anyone with those initials?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to Orozco in 10 years.
I was wrong, Mawney said, about the rope on his hands and feet. I had a guy take a look at it. It isn't very common after all. It's a sisal product from the Indian subcontinent.
Where would someone get it?
It's not for sale anywhere in the United States. It would have to come in on whatever gets exported from there.
Which is what?
Rolled carpets, bales of unfinished cotton fabric, stuff like that.
Thanks for sharing.
No problem.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Mawney left and they went up to Dixon's room. No real reason, they were still dead-ended. But they had to be somewhere. O'Donnell cleaned blood off his switchblade and checked over the captured hardballers in his usual meticulous fashion. They had been manufactured by AMT not far away in Irwindale, California. They were fully loaded with jacketed 45s. They were in fine condition and fully operational. Clean, oiled, undamaged, which made it likely that they had been very recently stolen. Dope dealers were not usually careful with weapons. The hardballers' only limitations came from being faithful copies of a design that had been around since the year 1911. Magazine capacity was only 7 rounds, which must have seemed more than okay in a world full of six-shooters, but which didn't stack up very well against modern capacities of 15 or more.
Pieces of shit, Nagley said.
Well, better than throwing stones, O'Donnell said.
Too big for my hand, Dixon said. I like the Glock 19, personally.
I like anything that works, Reacher said.
The Glock holds 17 rounds.
It only takes one per head. I've never had 17 people after me all at once.
Could happen.
The dark-haired 40-year-old, calling himself Andrew McBride, was on the underground train inside the Denver airport. He had time to kill, so he was riding it back and forth, over and over again, between the main terminal and Concourse C, which was the last stop. He was enjoying the jug band music. He felt lightened, unburdened, and free. His luggage was now minimal. No more heavy suitcase, just an overnight roll-on and a briefcase. The bill of lading was inside the briefcase, folded into a hardcover book. The padlock key was zipped into a secure pocket. The man in the blue suit in the blue Chrysler sedan dialed his cell phone.
They're back in the hotel. All four of them.
Are they getting close to us? His boss asked.
I have no way of telling.
Gut feeling?
Yes. I think they're getting close.
Okay, it's time to take them down. Leave them there and come on in. We'll make our move in a couple of hours.
Chapter 41 O'Donnell stood up and walked to Dixon's window and asked,
What have we got?
It was a routine question from the past. It had been a big part of the special unit's standard operating procedure, like an unbreakable habit. Reacher had always insisted on constant recaps. He had insisted on combing through accumulated information, restating it, testing it, re-examining it, looking at it from new angles in the light of what had come afterward. But this time,
Nobody answered except Dixon, who said,
"All we've got is four dead friends."
The room went quiet.